They are cheering on Broadway for the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team, celebrating their latest World Cup win with a ticker tape parade in New York. The storied success of the women's team might best be summed up with two other sounds. There's the moment of victory, a goal by midfielder Rose Lavelle in the 69th minute that sealed the final score, 2-0.
Looking, cutting, shooting, goal! Lavelle, 2-0 U.S.
But this next sound might be the most telling. After that match, FIFA President Gianni Infantino took to the stage, and the crowd had something to say to him. It's not the first time that fans have demanded equal pay for women's soccer, but that demand is a lot louder after Sunday's win. According to The Guardian, if the U.S. men's team somehow miraculously won the World Cup, they would make $730,000 more in bonuses than the women made for actually winning the World Cup. I'm sorry, correction, for winning their second cup in a row. Have we reached a tipping point? Joining us here in studio is Lindsay Gibbs, a sports reporter for Think Progress. She also co-hosts the podcast Burn It All Down. Lindsay, welcome to 1A.
Thanks so much for having me.
Joining us from WUNC Public Radio in Durham, North Carolina, is Hampton Dellinger. He's an attorney who represented an international coalition of female soccer players protesting gender inequality at the 2015 World Cup. Hampton, welcome.
Thank you.
We'd also love to hear from you your thoughts on pay equity in women's soccer or women's sports in general, especially if you are a female athlete, maybe you coach a women's sport. How do you feel about this issue and what do you think would make a difference? Email us 1A@WAMU.org, tweet us at 1A, or comment on our Facebook page. Lindsay, let me start with you. The pay equity issue has become especially galling, kind of in light of this additional win. Can you paint us a little bit clearer picture about the pay gap? We mentioned the bonuses, but what are some of the other disparities that the women's team faces?
Yeah, well, if you're looking at globally, the FIFA pay gap is the most staggering. For the next Men's World Cup, the pay will be $440 million in prize money. The total prize money for this Women's World Cup was $30 million. So that's a $410 million gender wage
gap. So it's less than a tenth.
Yeah, less than a tenth. And that actually increased. They doubled the women's prize money from 15 to 30 this cycle, but raised the men's prize money by $40 million. So we're going backwards here.
And Lindsay, can we be clear on the difference between the women's record and the men's record? What is the disparity between how those two teams perform?
Well, so I'm that stat is FIFA as a whole. So that's the prize money for the entire World Cup. But on the U.S. level, there's still a pay discrepancy between the men's and women's team. U.S. soccer blames a lot of that on FIFA, on the fact that if the men qualify for the World Cup, FIFA gives them more money, sometimes even than when the women win the World Cup. However, they're not tied to those bonus structures by FIFA. They could structure their pay differently and equally. They just choose not to.
What about the records of the two teams? I don't think I asked my last question clearly enough. I guess I'm trying to paint a clearer picture of how well the women perform in World Cups and so on compared to the way how well men perform.
Right. Well, the U.S. men have never won a World Cup. Are you talking about the U.S. team specifically?
Yes.
Yeah, the U.S. men have never won a World Cup. They didn't even qualify for the last men's World Cup, whereas the women have won four World Cups, including the last two in a row. So there really is no comparison.
Hampton Dellinger, let me come to you. The U.S. women's national team filed suit against U.S. soccer, which is the governing body, for gender discrimination. Both of them have agreed to a mediation process that will begin soon. What defense has U.S. soccer put forth for the pay inequity? Have they offered any kind of explanation?
They have, and I really think it is indefensible. Their defense has been the teams are separate and unequal, and there's been a focus by U.S. soccer on the men's regime and too much of a focus on FIFA, the global overseer of the beautiful game. And U.S. soccer has really used FIFA as an excuse for its disparate treatment of the men's versus the women's team. But when you look at the facts, you have the U.S. women's team with higher ratings, with greater attendance, with more sponsorship interest than the men's team. And I really think this separate and unequal argument is beneath U.S. soccer and epitomizes a generation of neglect and mistreatment by U.S. soccer of the women's team.
Hampton, clarify what you mean by separate but unequal. That's the kind of thing that makes a brother like me be like, what? What does that mean? Are they saying that the women's soccer, that women's soccer is inherently different to men's soccer and therefore merits less money? Is that what that means?
That does appear to be U.S. soccer's defense, and I really think it is hard to comprehend. The idea that this game, which is played, it should be literally on equal playing field, is considered different by the overseer of both the U.S. men's and women's team is unfathomable to me. And that's why I have advocated that U.S. soccer no longer oversee the women's team. It's a male-dominated organization that has not treated its most valuable asset, going back to the iconic 1999 women's team, which won the World Cup on PKs in the Rose Bowl.
The PKs, penalty kicks.
Yes, penalty kicks. U.S. soccer just has undervalued and penny-pinched the women's team for too long, and that's why I think we need to have a new regime and have someone else oversee women's soccer.
We're speaking to attorney Hampton Dellinger, who represented a coalition of women's soccer players in 2015, and sports reporter Lindsay Gibbs of Think Progress, and also the co-host of the podcast Burn It All Down. Lindsay, can you clarify exactly what USA Soccer is, how it works? We know it's the governing body, but like, what does that mean practically?
Well, so it's in charge of kind of running both the national teams, the development teams, so the under 21, under 18. I'm not sure I'm getting all those ages right, but you know, the junior level teams, as well as developing soccer throughout the country. So it kind of takes that governing body role, like USA Gymnastics does in gymnastics, or USA Basketball does in basketball. So, you know, it's given its power pretty much through the government, through the federal government, to be able to oversee these sports. And what they have just done, though, is they have, to build on what Hampton was saying, they've lumped all of their rights together. So when sponsors come forward and want to, you know, get television rights for the U.S. national teams, they get it for both the men and the women. When sponsors come forward, they're all bundled together. And U.S. Soccer has said, and this is something women's sports hears throughout, name the sport, they hear it, that the men are in a lot of ways subsidizing the women, that they're doing this because they can't sell the women's rights on their own, so they're kind of packaging them together. But I think what we've seen is that this women's team has much more market value than the men's team right now. Their jersey, this World Cup, became the number one selling jersey on Nike.com. They're actually out-earning the men at the gate. And so, you know, I think it's just time for U.S. soccer to, as a governing body, to rethink everything about its plan, or like Hampton said, for the women to take a step back.
So, Lindsay, is that where the power really resides? I mean, if U.S. soccer won't make the change, if FIFA won't make the change, is it up to sponsors like Nike to kind of force it from the business end?
Yeah, I mean, I think Nike has a huge amount of power here. I wrote about it after the World Cup win, that, you know, they're kind of capitalizing on these women as inspirations. At the same time, they're partnering with U.S. Soccer, who treats these women as less than. So Nike's money is invaluable. Well, probably not literally. It's very valuable.
It's pretty valuable, yeah.
It's very valuable,
they
too.
They can put a dollars and cents precise value.
Yeah. Right. Actually, that's the exact opposite thing.
Exactly. But that's the point.
But it's like they are needed and they have power, but companies tend to, you know, promote these women as these inspirational figures. They want to market and benefit off of these, the feminist ideals, and yet they're really, not putting their money where their marketing is.
Let me get to some of your questions. And Hampton, I wonder if you could take this question from Tim, who emailed, is this a U.S. soccer issue only? Should WNBA players be equal to the NBA? I imagine LeBron makes more than the entire WNBA. Hampton?
I think there are a range of issues that the U.S. women's soccer team situation brings to the fore, and I think everything should be on the table. But as Lindsay says, this is just a case-closed situation for soccer. The women have been subsidizing the men, and we know that from U.S. soccer's own documents in recent years. It's the U.S. women who are the valuable team. And so to think about situations with in other professional sports, in college sports, where there is gender-based disparities for coaches' salaries or player salaries, those are issues that should absolutely be on the table. But I don't think there's any question that the U.S. women have been undervalued and have been subsidizing the men for far too long.
Joseph tweeted, "Hey 1A, my grandfather coached women's basketball for an American high school in Italy. I believe that if the pay was based on talent instead of popularity, the women would make much more money as they deserve. I support equal pay." JJ emailed, "Why don't they schedule a friendly between the women's and the men's team to prove the women deserve to receive equal pay?" Oh my goodness. Campton, one more question for you from Joshua, who tweeted, "Why aren't the women covered by the Pay Equity Act?"
Well, I think that is part, the Equal Pay Act is what I'm familiar with at the federal level, and that's certainly part of their lawsuit. And I think U.S. soccer has a lot of motivation as the nation and the world have watched the women and applauded the women to settle this suit. But I'm just not confident in the current leadership of U.S. soccer. They've had a generation to do the right thing. Their slogan has been one nation, one team. But to my mind, it's too little, too late. But they can make a start now and it'll be past time.
The case you were involved in Hampton back in 2015 with women's soccer players, that involved players suing over having to play on artificial turf when the men played on real grass. And anyone who knows anything about soccer knows that, like, real grass is kind of the only way to play soccer. Artificial turf is literally more dangerous to play on than real grass. Talk about the outcome of that, real grass, excuse me. Talk about the outcome of that and whether that might give us any clues as to where this is headed.
Sure. The outcome was that FIFA said that if we prevailed in our suit, if the players prevailed, that they were prepared to cancel the tournament. And indeed, just months after the 2015 Women's World Cup, a number of FIFA officials, the people that I was dealing with, were indicted on a range of graft and corruption crimes. And U.S. soccer throughout was silent. So while the 2015 World Cup was played on artificial turf, a plastic pitch, which was outrageous, it did, the exposure from our lawsuit did, I think, guarantee that that will never happen again. But it also, again, proves the fallibility of U.S. soccer. They are too subservient to FIFA. They are too subservient and connected with the men's professional league in the United States, MLS. And their refusal to stand up and support the women's players for literally a level and equal playing field was all I needed to know that the current regime doesn't work.
Lindsay, the politics of this have also gotten pretty intense. Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, Kirsten Gillibrand signed a letter back in March in support of equal pay. Hillary Clinton retweeted a tweet that read, "Equal work deserves equal pay," tagging U.S. soccer. Megan Rapinoe went on Anderson Cooper 360 last night. She's the team co-captain. And she was asked about whether she would accept an invitation to the White House. She said she would not, but she is planning to accept other invitations.
We've always been interested in going to Washington. This is such a special moment for us, and to be able to, you know, sort of leverage this moment and talk about the things that we want to talk about and to celebrate like this with the leaders of our country is an incredible moment. So yes to AOC, yes to Nancy Pelosi, yes to the bipartisan Congress, yes to Chuck Schumer, yes to anyone else that wants to invite us and have a real substantive conversation. And that believe in the same things that we believe in.
That's USA Women's National Team co-captain Megan Rapinoe speaking on CNN last night. We're low on time, but Lindsay, I wonder how the politics around this might move this issue.
Yeah, I think you're seeing all over the place that politicians want to get in on this, too. We saw a bill introduced yesterday. I haven't had a chance to read it all about, saying that if the women's team, if U.S. soccer doesn't step up and pay the women's team equally, then perhaps the federal government could take away some subsidies for the 2026 Men's World Cup that's supposed to be in the United States. I think we're seeing more acts like that. And, you know, these women are not running from the political nature of what they do, of who they are. They're running towards it. They're just not, they've said multiple times, not going to give their platform to President Trump and what he stands for.
And before we go, Lindsay, how far do you think the fans will go in pushing for this? Are fans willing to give up their passes, stop buying tickets?
Well, I hope what fans will do is keep supporting these women, not just once every 4 years, but all throughout the cycle. The National Women's Soccer League is going on this summer. Look and see if there's a team near you. There's one in D.C. There's one in North Carolina, Portland. Support these women year-round and prove that they are worth it.
Lindsay Gibbs, a sports reporter for Think Progress and co-host of the podcast Burn It All Down. Lindsay, thanks for talking to us.
Thanks so much.
And attorney Hampton Dellinger, a lawyer who represented an international coalition of women's soccer players in 2015. Thanks, Hampton.
You're welcome.
This conversation was produced by Avery Kleinman and Orion Donovan Smith. To learn more about our team, visit the1a.org/staff. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.